This was Haiti's fourth presidential election in a row since 1990, where the poor voted in a landslide for one candidate. And this is the fourth election in a row where Haitian rich, with foreign support, are working to sabotage the popular will. To analyze the most recent election, I'm joined by Brian Concannon. He's the director of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. He had worked for the United Nations in Haiti in 1995 and 1996. He also has observed several earlier elections in Haiti for the Organization of American States. We've reached Brian Concannon in Pittsburgh. Good afternoon, Brian.
Good afternoon, Karen. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us. An election, and this election in particular, has many stages, from the freedom to run candidates to registration of voters, campaigning, voting, counting. Can you give us a brief overview of what happened in each of these stages in the Haitian election?
Sure. It's interesting because the landslide election that President Préval won was in spite of a playing field that was very sharply tilted against his supporters. Going back to the registration period, where the democratic governments, and actually President Préval was president for the last election under a democratic government, they had over 10,000 registration centers. The current interim government had a little bit over 400, and that made it very difficult for poor people to vote, because not only were the voting centers too few and far between overall, they were also placed disproportionately in wealthier neighborhoods. For example, the suburb of Pétionville, which is just one suburb, it's an upscale area, they had three voter registration centers at one time, and the whole Central Plateau, which is a big department, they had three. And people in Pétionville, it was a 10-minute walk for everybody to get there, and the people in the Central Plateau had to walk for more than a day just to get to the registration site. And people made that effort, but a lot of people couldn't. They were too sick, or they couldn't leave their fields. And then the same type of thing happened again with the placement of the registration booths, or of the voting booths. There were about 800, again, where the Democratic government had over 10,000. There weren't any in Cité Soleil, which is Haiti's biggest poor neighborhood. It's in Port-au-Prince. There were not enough in poor rural areas. And again, although the people made a heroic effort to vote, it had an effect of making it hard enough that some people were not able to do it. And on voting day, you also had a lot of organizational snafus, where a lot of places didn't even have their ballots at the beginning of the day. There was one, and again, this is where the people from Cité Soleil had to go, was one of the worst places. They moved the voting center at the last minute. They had over 30,000 people were supposed to vote in a single building, and it wasn't a huge building. And so it was real pandemonium and difficulty, and a lot of people ended up waiting in a couple hours in one line, only to be told that it wasn't the right line. And some of the people go and wait in line for 2 hours at a second line and the third line, as long as they had to do, but also some people had to leave, which ended up depressing votes from the poor areas. Then the next problem was with the actual transport of votes from the election offices to local election offices to the central county place. A lot of those were diverted. We don't know how many, but we know that thousands were found in just one dump, and there's been no explanation as to how that happened, and obviously no verification that didn't happen to other places where the ballots might have been completely burned, so we don't even know if they were destroyed. There were also a lot of irregularities in the counting procedures. At the beginning, when the votes started to come in, the early official results had President Préval winning with over 60% of the vote, and that was consistent with almost all of the unofficial reports from election observation missions, from journalists who looked at the local results and made a kind of an unofficial tally of them. All of them had President Préval winning by over 60%. But after a few days, all of a sudden, Préval's vote count kept going steadily down and ended up at a little bit less than 50%. And there were a lot of, even within the Electoral Council, people were said that they were not given the right information, the way that the ballots were being tallied was done in secret, and that there are several members of the council actually charged manipulation in those results. So every step along the way, you had made it difficult for poor people's votes to be made and to be counted. The other problem that's kind of over all of this is the question of political persecution, and that's been going on for 2 years since the interim government was installed. They have systematically attacked their opponents, especially members of the Lavalas movement. There are dozens of top Lavalas officials in jail. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of grassroots activists in jail, and hundreds have been killed by either the police or the paramilitary forces, or in some cases, the United Nations. All of that had a real chilling effect on the elections, and so it's remarkable that despite these problems, that there was such a clear, unequivocal voice in favor of the Lavalas movement.
These were United Nations supervised elections. What does all these problems say about the UN?
Well, one of the things that a lot of people, human rights activists and solidarity activists, we've been saying since last summer, that there were serious problems with the elections. We said that there were problems with the human rights context, that there were problems with the registration, and all along, both the United Nations and the Organization of American States, which was also very involved in the elections, they kept saying, no, there's no problem, that there's just a few technical things that need to be fixed, and they'll be fixed. And they were wrong. I mean, it came down to elections, and on election day, you had very serious problems that might have affected the outcome of the vote. And I think it doesn't reflect well on the United Nations or the OAS that they let these things happen. I think their main agenda item was to call their whole intervention of the last 2 years a success. And so what they wanted was to be able to say on February 8th that there had been an election, and that you had a democratic government in place. They didn't care that much that the election, in fact, be very good, or that it be a very important step in consolidating Haiti's democracy. They just needed to be able to say there was an election and have that part done. So they just didn't really concentrate on some of the aspects to make sure that the election was of adequate quality.
In the end, the Haitian poor took to the streets protesting the rigged voting, and the elite were forced to concede the election to René Préval, who was declared president. Was this a clear victory?
It was the popular vote was a clear victory. The result was far from optimal. What happened was that it appears from everything that Préval did in fact win a first round victory, but that they manipulated the tallying of the results to put him slightly below 49.3. And it's also important to note that his nearest competitor was less than 12%, so less than a quarter of his votes. But what they did, instead of when all this these charges of manipulation, all these thousands of ballots were found, what should have happened was to go through and make sure that those votes were tallied right. And there were backup systems that were in place that would have taken some time, but they could have had a pretty good idea as to whether, in fact, Mr. Préval did win the first round vote under the rules. But instead of doing that, which could have caused a lot of embarrassment to the interim government and to other people who let the interim government get away with their manipulation, instead of doing that, they recalculated the way that they chose, recalculated the 50%. And that the good thing about that is it did give Préval the first round victory, which he earned in the popular vote. The bad thing is that opens the door for his opponents and for the United States and for everybody else who wants to undermine the Haitian government. It opened the door for them to say, well, these elections are contested. And and that process has already started, even though everybody admits that he completely throttled all his opponents in the vote. The New York Times, the Washington Post, the U.S. government, everybody's been saying, well, this is a tainted election. And they're going to use that taint as a leverage to prevent Mr. Préval from implementing the program that he was elected by a landslide to implement.
The Lavalas Party, the party of Aristide, did not run a candidate, and Préval ran under the banner of a group called Lapsois. What's the relationship between Lavalas and Lapsois?
Well, there's, as far as I know, there's no official relationship. What Lavalas was under a dilemma because they've been consistent for the last year and a half that they were not going to participate in the elections until the government stopped the persecution of its opponents, until it released the political prisoners, it stopped conducting police raids in poor neighborhoods, it stopped shooting at demonstrations. The government was not willing to make those concessions, and so Lavalas never said that they would participate in the elections. And they were faced with a dilemma of either participating in these elections and therefore legitimizing a very flawed process, or sitting out the elections and letting a right-wing candidate win. And the second, the dilemma was there because it was clear that the international community was not going to insist on quality elections, and that they would be, the international community would actually have been very happy if Lavalas had never participated. And it looks like the way that that they got around this dilemma was to have Preval and some other people run under the L'Espoir banner. And so Lavalas is still able to criticize the very real flaws in the electoral process, but you also have someone that the voters are fairly happy with as a president. In terms of former relationship, I don't believe there's any formal relationship between L'Espoir and Lavalas. I think that they certainly share the base. I mean, it was by all accounts the Lavalas base that gave Preval that victory. And it also looks like L'Espoir is going to win by far the most votes in the Senate, most seats in the Senate. I don't know. The results aren't out for the House of Deputies, but L'Espoir probably won't be a majority, but will be the biggest party. And they really owe their victory to the Lavalas movement. But as far as I know, there hasn't been any official relationship. I think there can't be, because if there had been an official relationship, that would have been used against Preval, either for some people an excuse to shoot him or as an excuse to marginalize him through political or economic coercion.
But will Preval implement a Lavalas-like program in the interest of the poor of Haiti?
He'd like to. When he was president before, from 1996 to 2001, he certainly did try to implement a progressive program. The problem is he's going to be under a huge amount of pressure, as he was from 1996 to 2001, but a lot more now, because you have the example of what happens if you're not compliant. You get put on a plane and sent to the Central African Republic. And so it's going to be an extremely difficult job for Preval, because not only does he have the economic coercion of the United States, of Canada, France, the usual suspects, he also has a UN occupation of the country for at least half of his mandate. The current de facto government has done a good job of infiltrating the police with former soldiers who couldn't have gotten into the police through any normal routes, but they were infiltrated in. They've also replaced a lot of the good judges in Haiti, and there weren't that many good judges in Haiti to begin with, but they replaced the good ones with some of their own handpicked people, and they're going to be responsive to Haiti's elite, not to the democratic forces. And so it's going to be a big challenge for Preval just to work with a justice system that's going to be hostile and to get control of a police, which will nominally be under his government, but will, as a practical matter, many of the officers are not really going to be responsive to him. The other problem he's going to be having is with Parliament. Although it looks like L'Espoir will probably be the biggest group, it will not be a majority, and so you're going to have a fragmentized Parliament, which, in the best of situations, it's difficult to get legislation through a fragmentized parliament. It's going to be especially difficult now, where you have all these pressures, especially outside money coming in, to obstruct the program that Preval was elected to implement. So it's going to be very difficult. I'm sure that he's going to try to implement the program. I'm sure that he's going to have to make some compromises, and the question is whether he's able to make enough compromises to really satisfy his base is going to be a big question.
Would things have been easier if the manipulations had been exposed and there had been an honest vote count?
I think so, because I think one of the wedges that they're going to use against him is the fact that this so-called contested vote count. Although on the other hand, it doesn't really. They would have found something else, and that's the example for President Aristide when he was elected in 1990. There was no serious dispute over his victory, but there was still a coup d'état 9 months later. Again, in President Aristide when he won in the 2000 elections, there was no serious dispute, but a year later they called them disputed elections, and that was part of the asserted justification. So I think that it helps a little bit in terms of getting leverage against Preval, the fact that they can at least call these tainted elections. But if they didn't have that leverage, they would invent something else.
Well, thank you for taking the time to speak with us, Brian.
Thank you for caring about Haiti. I think it's absolutely essential that if people in Canada and the United States do not make their country safe for democracy in Haiti, there's really not much hope for Haiti. So I really thank you for being interested in this issue.
I've been speaking with Brian Concannon. He is the director of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, whose website is www.ijdh.org. Brian Concannon had worked for the United Nations in Haiti in 1995-96, and he also observed several earlier elections in Haiti for the Organization of American States.